Did the Grinch steal Christmas this year? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principle Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst, and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hey, Barry, it's very good to be with you. The Grinch may have stolen Christmas. It wouldn't surprise me. But when you look outside, it looks like it's January.
Welcome to Ohio weather. What's the old saying? If you don't like
That's
the weather,
right.
Wait 5 minutes, it will change.
It was 60 last Saturday.
So,
I think it was 65 here. So, yeah. And it's supposed to be, what, 16 tomorrow? Tomorrow night.
That's what my understanding is. Now, we're taping this on Thursday afternoon. So, yeah, it's supposed to be fairly bitter coming in here very soon, which it's not really surprising. I mean, we're into December now.
It's December, yeah.
We're into the second week, going into the second week of December. And really, Chuck, I mean, some things are behaving normally. Take the weather. This is really kind of, I mean, other than maybe some of the, we've had a couple, 3 years here recently where I remember 70 degrees in January. Now, that's not a normal weather swing.
No,
but of course, it can happen.
That was all because
of global warming and climate change.
Right.
And man killing the planet. And all we need to do is get all the politicians together and they'll solve the crisis by voting it out and spending money on it to end it.
We will ban global warming and therefore it won't happen.
That's right. Because we are smarter and probably better looking than God.
The fact is that the global temperature has been falling now for about 20 years. It was held steady for it. It went up. There was global warming is undeniable.
Mm-hmm.
But the question is what caused it. And the whole argument is not that there's global warming or not. There was. And our good friend, the late Dr. Michael Kaufman, and I talked about this extensively. And yes, he was what you would call a climate scientist. He was a doctor of forestry, and he knew the climate inside and out. And he said, "Yeah, it got warm. It got warm in the 80s," and he goes, "But it didn't get as warm as it was in the 1930s. But it was definitely warm." And he says, "Now the idea that human activity caused the warmth,
right,
is laughable." He basically said, "Look, all you have to do to look to see, people who think they're in the know will laugh at you when you say this, but he says you have to look at the sun, and the people will laugh at you and tell you, well, the actual solar output is essentially unchanged."
Mm-hmm.
And the answer to that is we're not talking about solar output, because you're right. The sun is relatively steady on solar output. It has highs and lows. What is different is particles coming out of the sun. In other words, things that cause geomagnetic storms and cause changes to the outer radiation belts. In other words, sunspots.
Mm-hmm.
The magnetic activity of the sun. The amount of particles that are coming out of the sun doesn't remain steady. It works up and down on an 11-year cycle, 11-year short cycle, and then on a multiple, like a 400-year larger cycle. So you'll see very large maximums and very small minimums in the sun, sunspot activity. And sunspot activity has a big effect on the outer radiation belts function, and that has a large degree of function on how much cosmic radiation comes in. Now, what are cosmic rays? It's rays coming in from things like supernovas and different kind of cosmic events. Well, what's that have to do with the price of anything? Well, there is a theory out there, and it's a well-supported theory, that cosmic radiation is what drives cloud formation. The more cosmic radiation that comes through, the more clouds get formed. The more clouds get formed, the cooler the planet gets.
Sure.
Because this more sunlight is reflected.
Well, that makes sense.
Okay. Now, you can track cloud formation on 11-year cycles, which is the sunspot cycle. And, you know, we haven't been through it when we had great scientific instruments and satellites up and everything for the past 400 years. As you're aware, satellites go back to 1957, and they weren't really all that savvy on what was going on with the weather. They were busy throwing out beep, 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 if you've ever heard the recording of Sputnik.
Mm-hmm.
The first artificial satellite was Sputnik. All it did was throw out a little broadcast. Well, we've come a long way since then, and we are gathering lots of data. But the fact that you're going to be hearing that somehow from Alexandria or Ocasio-Cortez that this is climate change equals social justice, blah blah blah. It's getting silly. And the fact is that most scientists will tell you, yeah, we quit warming quite some time ago. Now we're worried about. I actually heard something the other day. I kind of laughed. They said we have to cut global warming. And here's the big plan: we're going to inject particulates into the atmosphere. Particulates. Do you have any idea why one of the reasons we banned coal-fired power plants?
If I remember, it was called VOCs, volatile organic compounds, which is basically particulates.
Particulates, yes, exactly. We're banning the burning of fuels that put particulates in the air. In fact, if you talk to people about one of the problems we're having with increased ultraviolet radiation is the fact that we've cut particulates to the point where UV radiation that used to be absorbed is now reaching us.
So that's why I stay with the sunburn
all
the time.
Well, you stay. Okay. You're a fair-haired boy, and you have to stay out of the sun. So how we got from A to B is because I got off on a rant like I always do, you know.
There is no such thing as a rant. We're just sharing lots of information that may all have threads that run together sooner or later.
And they do because, let's face it, the propaganda about global warming has to really to do with about is taxation and revenue.
Right. Well, it has to do with power and control.
Power and control, exactly. And
because again, Chuck, it's the classic formula: create a crisis, solve the crisis, consolidate power from the crisis, create new crisis.
Well, yeah, you usually never actually solve the crisis.
Well, I was putting solve in air quotes.
Yes. So. And that's unfortunately, folks, you can't see air quotes out there. But you don't actually solve the crisis. You ameliorate it a little. But in so doing, you create three or four other crises.
Exactly.
In which you propose, oh, well, that really has nothing to do with this crisis. And here's how we'll solve it. We'll create 10 more programs to deal with 5 more problems. And what are you going to get? Well, 10 programs is going to cascade into 40 more issues. And you still haven't really solved the first problem. In fact, a lot of times the solutions that come along make the first problem worse.
Well, or they are so bad, it makes the first problem seem almost desirable to go back to.
Which you and I have laughed about on this show more than once.
We have.
And we do see those things. And we're just going to see how things play out when the new Congress takes its seats.
Oh, sure, sure. Well, and again... you talked about Alexandria or
Ocasio-Cortez.
I can never say that middle name correctly or that first part of the hyphenated last name, whatever. But Ocasio-Cortez, honestly, Chuck, just in the sheer entertainment value alone,
yes,
I'm really not all that upset that she won that seat in Brooklyn because she is going to end up tying her own Democratic caucus in a number of fitful knots by saying what they're actually doing that they try not to talk about, which is moving the country leftward. She's bluntly, brutally, and maybe not totally dialed in, honest.
Oh.
She's very bare about what she believes and what she thinks needs to happen. And, you know, I'm going to just lay a guess that she's going to, quote unquote, mature in office, i.e. they'll sit on her until she stops talking to the press so openly. But honestly, she actually might be one of the best tools that the Republican minority now could be using in order to regain a majority by saying, listen, here is one of their folks telling you exactly what they're trying to do. You know, they want to go back to, they want to move to a position where we're getting rid of basically, well, and Chuck, the three things that are taken away usually by these social planners, these social justice types, the Nancy Pelosi's of the world.
Right.
And I'm not just saying the Democrats, because there are a number of puppies who want to do it too.
That's exactly it.
Number of puppies who want to do it too. But what's usually the three things that are taken away? Your money, your liberty. Oh, no, did I mention your money?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, so,
the three things.
The
yes.
three things that are taken away by them trying to fix the problem or to help you to be more enlightened, to live better, to be more just in the world. Now, you know, you mentioned this thing because I'm going to go on a little bit of a rant myself.
Okay, here we go.
Just a moment. I am getting sick to the point of saying something to people every time I hear a squish liberal talk about justice. Because it's painfully evident they have no earthly idea on how that's defined other than I get mine and you don't get yours. I have heard we talk about climate justice and everybody's heard of social justice and SJWs and all that other stuff. But okay, now they want, you know, there's economic justice, which means we need to take more money away from you because you're a middle class.
You're successful.
You're a white middle class, successful business person. And so therefore you don't deserve the money you got because, well, you didn't earn that.
Well, to quote Barack Obama, you didn't do that.
You didn't make
that.
You didn't build that. You didn't make that.
Yeah.
So there's economic justice. There's climate justice. And that is, you know, basically we all have to live, a green, vegan, totally recyclable, nothing that can actually give you any kind of, you know, competitive advantages in the world. You just have to basically go back to the Stone Age in order for them to be happy about the climate and the environment. Now, environmental justice. Every time you hear a word that's modified by the add-on justice, what they are actually asking for is injustice. They're asking for government and the force and power of government to come in and take from people things that are usually rights, oftentimes are personal property, or are things that government has no business, i.e. constitutional writ authority, to even be considering taking away. I heard one last night, as you know, this is our lame duck cycle in the Ohio General
right.
Assembly, which means that for the last, well, since just after the election in November, so about a month now, we've been going back and forth over what things are going to get done before they end the year and end the session cycle. And there are a lot of things that are floating around right now and a lot of bills that are getting, you know, looked at and all the lot. You know, honestly, if you really want to see the sausage really getting made, it doesn't happen during a budget cycle. It happens during lame duck.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've got, I mean, every lobbyist and their brother under the sun is flooding into the state house trying to figure out which bills are going to be the quote unquote Christmas trees, we call them, because that's where the presents get hidden. You know, you hide them under the Christmas tree, right?
In a movie, you call or a game,
yes.
A computer game, you call it an Easter egg.
An Easter
here,
egg.
Here
yeah,
you call right. it a Christmas.
You
Christmas
call it a Christmas
present.
Tree.
Yeah.
Yeah. So these bills become Christmas trees because a lot of these lobbies get their presents from them. And so you know, we've got a lot of these things going around, but so I've been up the state house pretty much constantly. Now, thankfully, so far this cycle, we haven't had any like nights where they're going till
2, 3, 4
in the morning.
Yeah.
Not that that won't happen, but I get flashbacks because here it is, today we're recording this the 6th of December. When people are hearing it, it's the 8th of December. It was 2 years ago on the 8th of December that I sat at the State House going back and forth between the chambers because that was the last scheduled day of the session for lame duck till 3:30 in the morning.
I remember
trying to get stuff done.
I remember.
Because, hey, I'm not above trying to wrap a couple things that I need to get done for my clients who are pro-life or pro-family into some of these other bills that I know they need to get done. That's how we ended up getting the ban on assisted suicide, is we wrapped it into another bill they really wanted badly and got it done in the late hours, and I got a Christmas present. You know, my folks got a Christmas present. This cycle, though, I think the Grinch has showed up at the State House, especially for those folks who are pro-life and pro-family. I'm waiting to see, though, because we're not done yet. This one's going to stretch a little longer than the first week of December. Definitely going to have committees and things going on next week. They are scheduled, and from what I heard from some folks inside, there's a session scheduled for the December the 19th, which is now live, at least for the House side, and probably will be for the Senate. And that's going to be a marathon session. That may be my 3 in the morning night.
Might be.
It is on that day, because they're trying to get a bunch of stuff done. Now, why am I thinking that the Grinch is showing up and that there's actually coal that are going to be showing up in our stockings? Well, I just have to take it on what I've seen so far today. Before I got here to record with you, and yes, we're live in studio together.
We are together.
Which is a rarity, but I managed to get out here. I spent the morning at the Ohio State House because on this day, and when you hear this recording, you'll already know, but on this day, there was supposed to be a vote on the heartbeat bill, House Bill 258, which is the bill everybody knows and loves because we've been trying to get this done now for the last 8 years.
Yep.
Got it done last session in lame duck, only to have John Kasich veto it out of spite. He's threatened another veto this cycle. Okay. Bill was voted out of the House back in November, just a couple, 3 weeks ago. 60 votes in favor of it, which is exactly the number you need in the House to override a veto of the governor. So, goes to the Senate. Senate gets in. They have a hearing. We had a hearing on Tuesday for the sponsors and for folks who supported it, like our folks, our pro-life groups, and et cetera. Went long. That started at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Of course, they had 7 or 8 bills. This was the Senate Health Committee. They go long. We finally get up to testify. We are there until, I believe it was 6:30, testifying on the bill. All great. Fine. Next day, they schedule a committee hearing for same time, 3 o'clock. This was Wednesday, yesterday. The opponents came in to testify. Now, yesterday was the only bill on schedule. Nothing else there. But the committee didn't get started because Senate session ran long, so it didn't get started until about 5 o'clock in the evening. I was there. I was there up in the gallery of the Finance Committee room where they were holding the committee. And I sat there and watched and listened as one after the other, pro-baby killers of every stripe. And Chuck, what was really disturbing is many of these were young women who are getting their degree to become physicians.
Isn't that frightening?
It is very frightening. Planned Parenthood was there, obviously. NARAL was there with their contingent. The ACLU came in to say their piece on how, they believe in justice for the oppressed minorities, except if you're in the womb. But I hear the term reproductive justice. And I have to ask, and I almost just said it out loud when I'm setting up there, among other people in the gallery, for whom? Because it's obviously not justice for the unborn child.
Well, Barry, as a paid consultant and a lobbyist, you really couldn't do that.
Oh, but you got to understand something, Chuck. I don't play by the same rules
I know you
that
don't.
They like to play by.
I know you don't. But you know you're going to get your chance to ask that question.
Yeah, I'm going to get the chance, and I'm going to get the chance to probably tee off on a number of people.
Yeah.
But, so, we were supposed to have a vote on the bill. Well, the chairman of the committee had to get called away because another committee, obviously with everything running late, it bound everything up. Well, there was another committee, and then they had flooded the room with like 30 or 40 people to testify in opposition. About 8:30, so this started a little after 5, so 3 straight hours
of testimony,
of 3-minute limit testimony. And they did the same thing to the proponents the day before, so it was fair. They had a timer, you got 3 minutes. 8:30, they finally get down to the committee, only to say that they're recessing the committee because the chairman had to go off site and he couldn't get back. They thought they were going to go longer, and he thought he'd have time to get back, but they got through all their witnesses. So they had to recess the committee, no vote. They're going to reconvene 9:30 this morning. Well, I'm driving into the State House this morning. This is Thursday. First of all, I get caught up because there was a fatality accident on the highway on the route that I take to go to Columbus. So I ended up sitting in traffic for an hour and 15 minutes waiting for them to clear this situation.
Fatality, yeah.
So I offer prayer. I'm not sure who was involved, but obviously somebody lost their life out of it. So as I heard from the radio after the fact, and I saw the vehicle, and if somebody survived that crash, it would have been a massive miracle because that car was mangled. So, you know, I'm sitting here looking at, you know, how brief life can be, only to get to the State House to find out that, oh, the jig's up because we've got Republican members of the Ohio Senate who don't want to vote on saving unborn children. It's not convenient for them to vote for it. They want to vote. They want to put exceptions in. They want to say, okay, we'll save babies unless they're conceived by rape, incest, or that maybe mom's health might be affected if she carries the baby to term. These are coming from Republicans, Chuck, not the Democrats.
I know.
Now, the Democrats have their own series of amendments that they want to throw in the bill. You know, big deal. They don't have any power in the Ohio Senate. They have 9 members of a 33-member body. How much power do they hold? None. But what you do have is, because the Ohio Senate would need 20 votes, which is the threshold for the amount of votes you need in the Senate to override a veto of the governor, you have calculating members of the Republican caucus who know how to count noses. There are 3 hardcore pro-abort members of the Republican caucus, the ones who are obvious about it.
Who, okay? Are you willing to say who they
are?
Oh,
absolutely.
Let's hear who they are.
It is Stephanie Coonsey, who's from Columbus.
Uh-huh.
It is Gail Manning from Lorain County. And it is Matt Dolan, who is a member from the Cleveland area. His family own, I believe, the Cleveland Indians.
Uh-huh.
He's, you know, trust fund baby. They have voted on the floor of the Senate against other measures that don't do nearly as much as heartbeat would of saving babies who have a detectable heartbeat. They've voted against a bill to ban abortions on kids who have diagnoses of Down syndrome. They have voted against that. Those 3 have voted consistently against pro-life measures. So we know that they're not going to be voting for heartbeat.
Okay.
There are 24 members of the Senate Republican caucus. So what does that get us down to? If those 3 don't vote out of 24, what do we got?
20. 21.
No, actually, you're right the first time. We only have 20 because the Ohio Senate has yet to swear in the replacement for now Congressman Troy Balderson's seat.
What is going on with that?
They've picked the member. It's the Representative Brian Hill from Zanesville, who has been picked by the Senate Republican caucus to take the seat. But for some strange reason, they're delaying seating him in the Senate.
Okay.
So now that means we only have 20 votes because 1 seat's empty and 3 are going the other way. We have Republican members, and there's more than one of them, but there's one who's really driving this, who are basically going to the Senate president and saying, unless you give us these amendments, basically to gut the bill, to put all these exceptions in there, I won't vote for it. Can't get to 20 votes. 17 doesn't do you any good when you know the governor's going to veto it. You know, you can get 17 votes. There are 17 lockdown votes in that Republican caucus for this measure. But there's one member who's holding out his vote. Yeah, it's a he. And he's probably got two members, and it's fungible and questionable which two of those members are that are hiding behind his coattails. But they got 17 who said yes. You got a couple that are squishy, don't want to commit, and you got one who's playing political baseball behind the scenes, because this person has been trying to get this bill, get exceptions pushed into this bill for the last 8 years. Bill Coley from Cincinnati, from Butler County, from Cincinnati. Now, some people may be familiar with Coley's name because he's the guy we're dealing with, because he's the chair of the committee that's pushing for the Constitutional Convention resolution. He's also the member who chaired the committee, which today, and you and I discussed this offline, and we're going to talk about this too, gutted a bill to allow people to protect themselves with firearms. It's called Stand Your Ground, basically meaning that you couldn't, if someone tried to assault you and you have a concealed carry permit and you carry a firearm, that if you had to incapacitate or drop the assailant, that you wouldn't automatically be charged with an assault or with a crime because you were defending yourself. That's what it means. It means you don't have to run away and hide. You don't have to try to flee the scene and get away from the individual who is under no compunction to follow the law because they're committing a crime in the first place.
He's already breaking the law,
Well, Senator Coley, in his role as the chairman, decided he was going to gut the bill today by jamming in a provision that says that you have a duty to retreat. Now, Chuck, what good is a Stand Your Ground bill with a mandated duty to retreat?
Well, it's useless. I mean, they're mutually exclusive.
Thank you.
It's an absurdity on its face.
I talked to some of my friends in the gun rights community. They are livid.
Okay, folks, who came out and said it was okay?
Well, it looks like one of the gun groups in Ohio did, and from what I'm hearing, it's Buckeye Firearms Association, which have become pretty much a mouthpiece for the Republican caucus.
Yeah, that's the problem with Buckeye Firearms. Buckeye Firearms used to be right up front. They were hardcore. Now they're squish. So if you're a member of Buckeye Firearms, and I have not joined for this reason, I was getting ready to join, and all of a sudden they started doing some really weird stuff.
They started becoming more of a carbon copy of the NRA, because that's exactly what they're doing.
Yeah.
No, there's another group. It's called Ohio Gun Owners. You know, you should go over and check them out. They're the no-compromise gun lobby. Like, we are the no-exceptions pro-life lobby with the Right to Life Action Coalition. Ohio Gun Owners is the no-compromise gun lobby. So, they're not happy. Nobody's happy today because, well, there's a Grinch in the Ohio State House, and his name's Bill Coley. So, folks, you know, that's the thing. We're trying to get around this. Now, supposedly, according to media reports coming out today, that the heartbeat bill is not dead yet, that the chairman of the Senate Health Committee, Dave Burke from Marysville, who, I'm going to say, Chuck, is with us on the bill. He supports it. He had some very strong words with me the other night, and I don't mean he was mad at me. He was mad at the situation. Because he's like, let's get this done. But be that as it may, he's called and said that they will be having a vote on heartbeat next week in committee, that they are going to look over and consider the amendments. Now, I believe we have enough strength in committee to knock down pretty much all the amendments. I am begging Senate President Larry Obhoff to call Coley's bluff.
Right.
Put it on the floor. Let him vote no.
Oh, he won't.
He won't. That's exactly right. He won't expose himself because he parades around as a conservative.
Exactly. That's my whole point. He puts on like a conservative, and he lets other people carry the water for killing a bill he doesn't really like. That's the way the game is played, folks.
And I know I'm going to have to deal with him for the next 2 years because he's term limited in 2020. But frankly, at this point, I don't care. You know?
Yeah.
There's nothing that Bill Coley has ever done that has been positive for anything that I work with. You know, he's pushing the con resolution. He tried to block the fetal remains bill, which is we're now just trying to get off the floor of the House so that we can get it done. He tied that up in committee for over a year because he was meeting with Planned Parenthood to find out how to get them on board.
Oh, come on.
Well, no, it was the excuse.
Yeah, okay.
So he's gutting a pro-defense bill in the Stand Your Ground piece. And now he's playing games with babies' lives, the heartbeat bill. I have no respect for this man. I frankly don't care, you know, how he is going to respond to me saying all this, because frankly, I don't have any respect for him.
Yeah.
And I know I'm going to have to deal with him for the next 2 years because he acts like a bully and browbeats some of his colleagues who you don't want to stand up to him. I think it's time that the people of Ohio stood up to him. You know, call it out for what it is. He supports killing babies, and he supports taking away your right to defend yourself, your property, and your family. That doesn't sound very conservative to me.
No, it's not. Try? It's not conservative at all.
Okay.
He's one of those people that thinks because he's got an R attached to his name, that means conservative. Folks, okay, just for fun. It's not really fun because, let's face it, a president of the United States, a former president of the United States, has died. And he did perform heroic service in the military.
Yeah, well, absolutely. No question about that.
And for that, we give thanks, because if men like that had not, jeopardized their own lives to be in defense of the United States, we don't know for sure what would have happened. Had we been defeated on the battlefield in Europe and in Asia, where he was. George H.W. Bush, as you're all well aware, has passed away. However, George H.W. Bush was nothing like a conservative. Nothing. Oh, he sold himself as such. But all you have to do is look at his record, and you can see, you know, read my lips, no new taxes, and immediately turn around and sign a tax bill, which essentially ran a stake through the heart of the Reagan,
recovery,
because if you remember Bill Clinton, who ran against him, and by the way, I personally think that George Bush basically fell on his sword in 1992 in that election. People say he was ill and all that stuff. I just think he stepped aside for a greater progressive. He campaigned and all that stuff. But he didn't really handle himself all that well. And what was Bill Clinton's big thing, the big poster he had on his desk? ITES. Do you remember that?
No, I don't.
It's the economy, stupid.
Oh, okay, yes, okay.
ITES was Bill Clinton's cry, and he was going to fix the economy. Well, he did sort of fix the economy after he was reelected to his second term and got forced into it because he was a scandal-plagued guy and he wanted to keep his job, so he kind of kowtowed to the Republican Party a little bit, who, by the way, is also largely not conservative. Bill Coley's the kind of guy that the Republican Party loves because he'll follow orders from the party, and the party... these kind of guys hate, they hate Trump because he won't follow orders from the party. Why? He's not beholden to the party.
Mm-hmm.
The party tried to sabotage him and he won anyway. And the fact that the president is the de facto head of the party means nothing to them.
No. And obviously after the election, Trump, gets... the titular head of the party gets to pretty much pick who they want to head up the Republican National Committee, which is the, you know, the party arm of the party, you know, where they do all the internal stuff and work with the state parties and all that stuff. Well, he picked
Rona Romney McDaniel, yeah. Mitt Romney's...
Do you realize how little respect she gets from a lot of the state parties?
Oh, I know.
I mean, it's just... It's ridiculous because, well, that was Trump's person, and they don't like Trump.
Even though she's a Romney.
Yeah, which is an interesting...
Which isn't it real, yeah.
Yeah, that's one of those interesting juxtapositions now, isn't it? But, you know, you're right. So, you know, we have George H.W. Bush passing away. And again, I wasn't a big fan of his presidency. No. I don't consider him to be a conservative. As a matter of fact, one of the big things that Bush did was to establish under his presidency a direct line of funding for Planned Parenthood.
Yes.
So it's Title 10. That's a George H.W. Bush legacy. Now, I understand there's a number of groups out there that are, shall we say, reflecting on how much more pro-life George Bush became over time. I'm like, okay, I didn't see it.
No.
And that's fine. You know what? He's passed. At this point, it doesn't matter where he is on that. What does matter is where he was in spirituality with his relationship with Jesus Christ.
Exactly.
And I'm not sure that that was there either, but... I believe they're Episcopalian, and not to say that Episcopalians, you know, are not believers, not saved, don't know Christ in a personal relationship, but by and large...
It's mainstream denomination, which has walked away from Orthodox Christianity.
Exactly, exactly. Now, does that mean that they were walking right along with it? That's not necessarily the case, but I can say I don't know the condition of his faith walk. I don't know the condition of his spirit. But what I hear, and it's touching, and it brings tears to people's eyes.
Right.
I heard Glenn Beck all breaking up on radio here the other day about it. But, you know, Bush's, you know, one of his things was they had a daughter who died early as a
quite young child.
of a cancer, and that he was looking to go forward to going seeing Robin. And, of course, Mrs. Bush, who passed away before him. Oh, and George W. Bush, 43, the son, who gave the eulogy, was talking about, you know, how he's happy that he's going to be able to be reunited with them. That may be true, but for a lot of people who think that they're believers or think that they have a relationship with Christ, but really don't bear any fruits, and really it's more of a cultural or a religiosity kind of feel.
Right.
There's no guarantees from that. There's no assurance of their pardon and their faith. It was a true converting, restoring, born again faith. I really hope so, because I wouldn't wish hell on anyone. People like Bill Coley, who I have no respect for.
He's actually I
pray for salvation of people's souls. I don't necessarily have to like them to pray for them.
Exactly.
And I don't necessarily I didn't have a deep burning dislike of George H.W. Bush. I just felt that, frankly, you know, again, he was an establishment Republican who liked to use the term conservative in a fungible way, much like what I see from a lot of people today.
Well, like his son, George W. Bush.
Who uses the term conservative in a somewhat fungible way, yes. That doesn't limit the amount of angst and grief and pain that George W. Bush was feeling when he gave his eulogy, or that their family feels, or that many people in the country who were close to them, the James Bakers of the world, others who are feeling, and Bob Dole. I mean, the biggest thing that's going around the internet right now is Bob Dole, who is wheelchair bound, having his aide lift him out of the wheelchair.
Struggling out of the wheelchair.
Struggling out of the wheelchair.
Yeah.
Getting into a attention position and offering a salute to a fellow war veteran. I mean, that's a big thing that's going around the internet right now. I'm not discounting any of that. I believe that that was very appropriate. I think that was very, very touching, and I think it was very right for that to happen. But what I am having trouble with, and I think many others are, that what you have are people on both sides of the political ideology spectrum who are reinventing history.
Yes.
Who are, you know, or as I heard Limbaugh say, that, you know, liberals, you're talking about how wonderful a man George Bush was. He goes, go back and remember what they were saying about him when he was president.
That's the whole point. That was where I was going, actually, because nobody seems to remember that even during this period of mourning, the left-leaning media is using George W. Bush as a lever against Ronald Reagan. That George W. Bush saved the economy by raising taxes when Ronald Reagan had gutted it. By lowering taxes, and that the Reagan tax cuts were an absolute nightmare to the economy. And those of us who were there at the time, you young whippersnappers, I'm sure you've gotten that in school. Those of us who were there at the time remember what it was like in 1979 and 80. In 1980, I was trying to buy a house. And when I went to the bank for a mortgage, they laughed at me. They said, you couldn't possibly get a mortgage, and if you could, it would be 23% interest.
Whoa. Yep.
That is what the economy looked like in 1979 and 80 under the management or mismanagement, if you will, of Jimmy Carter. Now, am I totally blaming Carter for that? No, because Gerald Ford was before him, and he blew it, as did Nixon before him. But the fact is that Ronald Reagan came in and said, look, we can't keep doing it this way. And he took the advice of people like David Stockman, who is reviled now by both establishment Republicans and the left. Why? Because David Stockman is not a Keynesian. He is an Austrian economist.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean? That means he doesn't like the idea of central banking at all. He understands that the boom and bust cycle is a construction of the central bank. Okay, that being said, Ronald Reagan's tax cuts saved the economy. By the time Ronald Reagan ran for re-election, unemployment was as high as, if I recall, unemployment got as high as 14% under Jimmy Carter. And when Ronald Reagan took office, I remember there are still people out there who talk about the Reagan recession.
Yeah.
In 1980, I'm like, you can't blame him for 1980 since he took office in January of 81 and budget didn't take effect until October.
Exactly.
Of 81.
The federal fiscal year.
Because
yes.
The federal fiscal year starts in 81. So the fact is, by 1983, the economy was starting to hum. Why? Because of the tax cuts. The tax cuts and the cutback in regulation. Now, what happened when was TEFRA? 86? When Ronald Reagan basically got backed into a corner and forced to sign a tax increase. Why? Well, he needed other stuff done, and he couldn't get it done without the tax increase. The Democrats kept screaming, we need more revenue, we need more revenue. The fact is, under Ronald Reagan, after that tax cut, federal revenues doubled. Why? Because there was more business and there were more people working.
Absolutely.
When there's more business and more people working, federal revenue goes up despite tax cuts. And what kind of cuts were they? Democrats always try to make it look like, and liberals and liberal Republicans always try to make it look like you cut revenue. No, you cut tax rates. When you cut tax rates within bounds, revenue goes up. That's exactly what Trump is in the middle of proving. Federal tax revenues have never been higher, and yet everybody got a tax cut this year. This last fiscal year.
Isn't it amazing that when you stimulate the economy by reducing taxes, people spend more?
And now what have we
and
got?
And therefore, you get more tax revenue from lower rates. What a shock.
Yeah, there's a big shock. Now, you're going to hear in the coming days, now that there aren't that many people around that remember, those of us who remember the 80s very well, I'm in my low 60s. I was in my...
That's good blood pressure, Jack.
Yeah.
That's good.
If only.
Maybe a little too good.
I wish my blood pressure matched my age. Yeah, no good. No good, man. No, I was in my late 20s when I was 23 in 1980. By the time Ronald Reagan left office, I was 31. 31?
Mm-hmm.
That sounds right. No, it doesn't matter. 88, yeah, 31, 89, actually 30. I would have been just almost 32. That was a great economic time. What did George H.W. Bush come in? Oh, he ran on the Reagan platform and immediately, essentially, implemented Michael Dukakis's platform.
Yes.
And the only reason he didn't get it completely done was Republicans in Congress said, no, 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 no. We remember what this was like.
That's right.
So the great conservative. Now, what's the news media doing? Oh, he saved the economy. He saved the country. How? By reimposing regulation
and raising taxes.
Yes. Yeah. This also basically is the reason why he got unelected as quickly as could happen.
Yeah, a one-term president.
Yeah.
That honestly, you know, it was kind of a double whammy kind of thing. First of all, he had alienated his base, and then secondly, the Democrats had struck gold with a charismatic governor
who ran as a conservative.
Who ran as a conservative? Exactly.
Bill Clinton ran as a conservative. All you have to do to know that that was false was to look at his cabinet, and George W. Bush too. George W. Bush, some of the guys, I mean, Reagan had guys like Caspar Weinberger and George Shultz, and everybody said, oh my gosh, and Secretary of State, and those got forced on him, essentially. The Republican Party said, you'll take George W. Bush, and we'll have some cabinet picks for state and defense.
James Baker. Absolutely.
And that crowd, globalists to a man. And militarist to a man. Now, did Ronald Reagan do some things militarily that needed to be done? Oh, yeah. I personally think so, yeah. Now, that thing in Lebanon, that was a bridge way too far. We had no business occupying Lebanon. No reason at all. But Grenada? My gosh, the Soviets were building a 10,000-foot bomber runway down there.
Oh, yeah.
And they claimed it was for tourism. Okay.
Well, I mean, that's okay under Barack Obama, China built an island.
Yeah. But in any case, they were building this. And if it had been Grenada with some little bit of international help building this 10,000-foot runway, nobody would have looked the other way. It was Soviet engineers who were building it and Cubans.
Yes.
What was the point of doing that? Get a fleet of Russian bombers in there. Why? Because you could then pull off the same maneuver you pulled off in the Cuban Missile Crisis. And that was the United States put nuclear weapons in Turkey, and therefore the Soviet Union put weapons in Cuba. And because it looked very much like a violation of the Monroe Doctrine, which it probably was, we threatened to go to war over missiles in Cuba. Now, what you don't know, you know that they claim that the Soviet Union backed down and moved their missiles out and all that stuff. Guess what? We moved ours out of Turkey too.
Yeah, well, that's right. Yeah, honestly, you had to.
Yeah, I agree.
There was no way around that.
I agree.
Yeah, you had to.
Because if you look at a map where Turkey is in relationship to the Soviet Union, it's pretty close. Nowadays, not much of that matters because our ballistic missile technology is such that we can annihilate each other very easily from our existing launch pads.
Yeah, well, we can fire them from Nebraska and they can be in Vladivostok in like minutes.
Yeah.
So, it's no big deal. That's the reason why we were always so worried about North Korea and whether or not they could actually, shoot straight.
little Rocket Man.
Rocket Man, that's right.
He didn't have much luck with it. He was not a ballistic missile master.
Yeah. Now, Chuck, I want to kind of roll back a little bit because, yes, there's a Grinch.
I agree.
And yes, things could look bleak. But the point is that, we are definitely not subject to the whims of whatever blows. We believe in Christ. We believe in his sovereignty. And that's what we got to go with. I mean, today I had to talk. We were talking with another activist advocate on this particular issue who was very filled with angst over things. And I'm not going to say names, but you know who I'm talking about.
I can guess, and
it was a very interesting conversation because finally got to the point of if you believe that God wants this done, then don't get in God's way. That everything is happening for a purpose.
Right. All things happen for the good who are in Jesus Christ.
That's right. And that there may be reasons why it was a smart move not to have that vote today on these pieces of legislation. There is also another piece. We talked about the gun bill. We talked about the heartbeat bill. But there's two other pieces. Obviously, there was one that came out of committee called the Student Religious Liberties Act to allow students in schools to be able to have the same religious expression that everybody else is supposed to have. Got out of committee with a bipartisan vote. We actually got a Democrat to come across and vote for that, which was great. It thought it was going to be up on the floor day two. It's not yet. But that's okay because that's not one that the governor is screaming about a veto over. So the likelihood is that'll get voted. And once it's voted, since it was not amended in committee, then it should just go straight to the governor's office. And then we can have some more protections for students. So there's some there's some optimism there. It didn't happen today, but today was kind of a day of, okay, I'm going to test to see how patient you really are. And I laughed because I get stopped for an hour and 15 minutes in traffic when I thought I had to be in Columbus by 9:30 in the morning for a committee hearing, and I left in my house at 7 for. I got there a little after 10, but it wasn't like you. It was weird because it wasn't like the usual, because sometimes when I get like held up, like I get like all anxious.
Yeah.
It wasn't today. I was like, okay. It's like, well, I could go double back and try to figure out another route and go through these like country roads and get lost, or drive all the way back down and go across another route and do that. Well, that's an extra hour's worth of driving. I'm like, nah, I just hung tight. It was weird. That's not me, Chuck. I'm not, if you ask my wife, I'm not normally characterized by that kind of patience with traffic issues. I'm admitting part of my sin here, folks. Yeah, so this is cathartic as well. Then I get to the State House and dealing with this activist lobby who I dearly love as a friend and fellow believer in Christ Jesus, but I have significant angst about how they go about handling things.
Yes, I know exactly what you mean.
But having a time together with a handful of people to pray and to try to figure out some strategy. And having that person actually pray about the idea that, God, we know you want unity. Look, I'm even actually standing here arm in arm with me. This person was praying that. I'm thinking, what? That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, so check. God, okay, you got one. Okay, there's another issue that you're dealing with. What else are you dealing with? We get done praying to the point where they decided, maybe it's best we just go and let them work stuff out. Like, yeah, that's basically where we need to be. We can't push this any harder. We can't push it anymore because there's no leverage.
Right.
All the leverage is inside the caucus with that one senator. So let's back off for a minute. Well, while we're sitting here recording this, I get a notice on my phone that the chairman of the Senate Health Committee has just announced they are putting it up for a vote in committee next week. So obviously something got worked out.
Apparently, yes.
Apparently, backing off and not putting pressure on the Senate president and screaming about having a vote today gave them some room to work internally. So it looks like we're moving. Now, whether we get amendments thrown on it or not and get stuff that's poison, we'll see. But, again, patience. I think that's my Christmas gift this year under the tree is figuring out how to be patient. I go from that meeting, that prayer circle that we're having, and yes, folks, we do have prayer circles at the State House. Matter of fact, there are many of the committees, especially in the House, that open the committee hearings with a prayer. ACLU just sits there and grits their teeth. They don't like it, but when the committee chair's doing it, they're not there.
Not much you can do.
And they got to testify on a bill in front of that committee chairman. They're not going to say much. There's a lot of prayer that's going on in the State House. Come back inside. I'm going around the corner. Who do I run into? But a pastor who has a ministry who comes down there all the time, often gives the invocation on the Senate floor, often is praying with the members, who prays for me. And he says something about God giving patience. Now, I wasn't being impatient. I just said, well, you know, this is a situation, and I guess we're just going to have to try to figure out, you know, what needs to be done. And he prayed for me for patience. I laughed. I said, you know what? I think there's a theme starting here.
But you have to be careful about praying for patience for yourself. You've heard that old saying.
I want patience right now. Yeah.
Never pray for patience because God will throw stuff at you to test your patience. To build patience. And it's like,
I have trouble with that little saying because it's like, God is not the author of temptations.
No, I know.
But
yes.
but the point is that there are a number of things that are beginning to happen and that could still happen that could end up creating a better outcome. Now, I know, and it grieves us all because every day that we don't get this done, more babies are being killed by abortionists in Ohio. The ACLU, in their testimony last night on this bill, said, let's not kid ourselves. This is a total abortion ban. We all know that
an infant's heartbeat means the infant is alive, essentially.
Exactly, and they basically know that nobody goes and gets tested for anything prior to 6 weeks.
Right.
Because sometimes it doesn't even appear prior to 6 weeks.
Yeah, you're sort of, a woman basically says, gosh, I'm late.
So we have our enemies admitting the fact that they know that this passes. Abortions are pretty much done.
Done.
Now, of course, they'll sue and they'll go away, and it may be years. But the point is that I have to remind our friends, we pray for God's will to be done in this because His will is being done. Things are happening. Hearts get changed. People learn lessons. God allows people to go their own way sometimes in order to bring down judgment too.
Yes.
And there may be a awesomely frightening day of judgment for guys like Bill Coley. I don't want to be his judge.
Yeah.
But I don't want to be in his shoes either if that's the case. So pray for him. Pray for the leaders who are making decisions. And pray that we all get a nice Christmas present of babies being protected. Families being, you know, unified, our religious freedoms being allowed to continue unabated, especially for our students, and that we would have, because of our change of hearts and prayerfulness, that our culture will be reclaimed. We have to do these things in order to get there. If my people who are called by my name, that's us, folks, that's not anybody else, that's not the world, that's us, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face, those three things, then I will hear from heaven, he will answer your prayers and he'll heal the land and restore us. That's what we need. So let's pray for Christmas trees with real presents.
And that being said, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And yes, I have caught up a lot of the old shows. So if you're out there looking for one of our old shows, it may already be up. Please join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.